Albert Manite now repudiates his recent story. The Atlanta Journal, Sunday, the 19th of April, 1914, page 1, column 6. Captain Burke of the Frank Defense promised Albert McKnight a $100 a month job to say he swore falsely. McKnight, a vacillating witness in the case against Leo M. Frank, has reverted to his original story given on the stand at the trial. He now declares that Captain C.W. Burke of the Frank Defense induced him by promises of reward to swear to the affidavit repudiating his first story. In this affidavit, he swore that R.L. Craven, his boss, framed the first story he told at the trial for him. McKnight is now a guest of the municipality, residing at police headquarters. He is locked in a cell in the state ward, a solitary cell, but he says that he is there of his own volition. He sought refuge at headquarters because he didn't know what was going on, he says. Chief of Detectives Newport Lanford says the Negro came to him in fear and sought protection, which he is giving him. McKnight appears to take much pride in his position as a guest of the city and proudly declares that he could get out this minute if he so desired. McKnight smiles just as blandly when he says that he perjured himself when he gave the affidavit repudiating his testimony at the trial to Captain Burke, as he did when a few months ago, reporters read over that affidavit to him, and he declared that it was correct and told a long story in which he charged R.L. Craven with framing his story for the trial. He said that it was in the hope of reward that he made the first statement. It was also in the hope of reward that he says he made the second statement. This is the story the Negro told a reporter at police headquarters Saturday night. Captain Burke came to me after the trial and asked me if I didn't want a Pullman job paying $40 a month in tips, which would bring it up to $100. That was the way he got around me. I told him, of course, it was better than $28 a month and no tips. He came to me two or three times, and I made that affidavit, saying Mr. Craven told me what to say. That was the affidavit you read to me, and I said was right. Reporters had McKnight confirm the affidavit repudiating his testimony before it was published. I told Captain Burke that Mr. Craven didn't get me to tell the first story, but he said that I was all right and I wanted the $100 job, so I swore to the affidavit. Then he told me it would not be necessary to quit the job I had right away, and I kept on working. Then you gentlemen talked to me and the affidavit was put in the papers. I didn't go back to work next Monday morning, and Captain Burke met me, and then I went to the country to see my people. I came back and had been here a little while and was going out to Pittsburgh when I got hurt by the train. Before I left the hospital, Captain Burke came to me and asked if I didn't want a job, and I told him I did. I was not well enough, but I wanted to work. Then he told me to go down here to Schoen Brothers, and I did. The man told me that I was hired extra, but he wouldn't have anything for me until Wednesday. But Monday, I got a job at the Terminal Station restaurant as a pot washer. I stayed 2 days, and Wednesday Captain Burke came to see me. He says, Albert, this is not the kind of a job I want you to have. And I told him he didn't get me another, and I told him the man had wanted to wait until Wednesday to put me to work. Then he told me he would get me a job in a guano factory. I told him I didn't want it. That doesn't look like any $100 job, did it? Then he told me two men wanted to see me, and I went out and talked with them, and they read me an affidavit that I gave Captain Burke about Mr. Craven, and I said, yes, it was my affidavit, and then told me to sign it. I signed it, but didn't read it myself. Then I went back and the chief told me Mr. Boyd, the manager, had told him to get another man in my place. Then before I left, Mr. Starnes and Campbell, the detectives, came to see me and asked if I would go to the solicitor's office. I said I would and we went down there. I didn't see Mr. Dorsey, but another man. And then I left there and came to the station house and asked them to let me stay. Did the city detective accompany you here? He was asked. No, sir. Did they suggest that you come down here? No, sir, I didn't know what was going on and thought I had better come here. It has been known for some time that several of the state's witnesses had repudiated their repudiations, but that McKnight was one of them was not known until Saturday night. With Detective William J. Burns expected to arrive in Atlanta the early part of the week, and the prospect of him making a report on his investigation of the Frank case, at that time, both the prosecution and defense were busily at work Saturday preparing for Wednesday's hearing on both the extraordinary motion for a new trial filed by attorneys Arnold and Rosser, and the motion to have the verdict of guilty set aside on constitutional grounds, filed by Ty, Peoples, and Jordan. Local agents of Burns would have nothing to say Saturday pending the arrival of their chief. Dan Lahan, who is in charge during Burns' absence, declared Burns would not arrive in Atlanta before Monday morning. Mr. Lahan stated the agency's report on the Frank case had not been completed. He could not say whether it would be used by the defense in the hearing on the new trial motion, he said. It became known Saturday that Solicitor Dorsey would probably be aided by associate counsel at the hearing. Mr. Dorsey had no comment to make on this matter, nor would he discuss the matter. That several affidavits bearing on the alleged action of Frank and his counsel in waiving his presence in court when the verdict was rendered will be submitted to Judge Ben Hill when the motion is heard, was rumored Saturday. It is said such affidavits have been obtained both by Ty, Peoples, and Jordan, and by Solicitor Dorsey.